Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Oh, tired today. Are you?
I am a bit. Yeah, I don't know what happened last night to either of us to both happen to wake up feeling really tired on the same day, but I don't know.
I think there's something that flew over Newcastle last night.
Just drained sort of everyone's life energy from them.
Some kind of dementor or sleep fairy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. But yeah. We will muscle on because there are video games to talk about.
Good way to set people up for the upcoming podcast.
Yeah, like, isn't it?
Just
are
so you know, everyone.
For just a terrible low energy chat.
Yeah. I mean, no, hopefully it won't be.
We'll wake up, I'm sure, as we go. Which just, in the grand scheme of things, neither of us are particularly awake at this current moment in time. But we're professionals, and now that we've acknowledged that...
professionally.
We will forge ahead and create some memories here.
Yeah.
Just you and I. So this is our video game podcast, which the wording of that implies that we have other podcasts that are not video game related here at Triple Jump, but that's not true.
No.
This is our podcast that is about video games because we're a video game channel and not an athletics channel. Mm-hmm. We are sponsored, Peter, each and every week by a very real company that wants to give us money to do this podcast.
Yes, we are. And this week, Ben has brought along an ad read for that company. So that we will get that podcast money. Ben, would you like
Absolutely.
To read it?
I will. This week we are sponsored by the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita Digital Store.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we weren't going to be.
No.
But then they decided, no, actually we will. We'll sponsor
actually,
you.
Actually, we will.
They just did a U-turn. It's not like them, really.
No, they usually stick to their course. So I've got let me see what it says here. It says, "Hey, idiots. Do you want to buy all of our games at full cost because you think they're going away forever? Hey, idiots, what about if we artificially drove up the already very high prices of Vita memory storage cards? Hey, idiots, what's that? You can't buy certain PS1 classics anymore because for some reason they've started disappearing from the store already? Well, good news, idiots. We're not going anywhere. So I hope all of you who spent money on our store in a panic and in the sort of the aftermarket eBay realm to get yourself a nice memory card for your Vita to store all those new games you were buying before they vanished forever. I hope you're all happy at all that money that you spent because the stores are staying around."
Was that verbatim? The bit where
Yeah. I was on the phone to them this morning. They were in a bit of a rush.
Oh,
they
just copied it down. Yeah.
I recorded their noise that they made out of their mouths. Mm-hmm. And just, that was me playing it back, actually. That wasn't even me speaking.
No, yeah, that was actually a recording.
It was just the audio. So, yeah, sponsored by the PlayStation Store on the PS3 and the Vita. It's sticking around.
Not that they need sponsoring, given that they just made a shed load of money by lying to people.
Yep. That's true. They made some money from me.
Let me refresh my memory because I made my notes. Yes. Okay. It is coming up in today's podcast. So I will hold my tongue for now. But I've got thoughts about this. In fact, yeah, we've got a question about the exact aspect of it that I want to talk about. So I'll wait. But
Have we?
Have we not? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to work. I'm looking at the same running order as you.
Question three.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I see it. That's fine. Yeah, we'll get to it. Unfortunately, that sponsor's not real because Sony doesn't care about you or me.
No.
And so they would never sponsor us. So there we are. Who we are sponsored by are our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. For only $1 per month, you get access to the podcast post where you can submit questions for this podcast. We have other tiers, of course, other rewards. So go check them out. Consider supporting us if you're in a position to do so. It would mean a lot.
Please do.
Peter, where are we walking today in the video version of this podcast?
Perhaps we're walking along a box of Kleenex because of the thin tissue of lies that we were fed. This week.
You really? I didn't know where you were going there.
No, I know. I mean, there's a lot of associations with Kleenex, and people don't tend to think of lies straight away.
We're walking along the crusty sock that we can't afford to wash because Sony made us spend all our money on their store.
Please, no. I don't.
The crusty sock is just crusty because we did athletics
because
outside.
Because we trod on a Domino's or something.
We did sports on the Domino's floor. Yeah. Anyway, what? Okay, let's move on to question one, shall we?
Yeah, it's from Copernicus J Dog, which is a great name, and I hope it's his real name.
Mr. J Dog.
Who says, howdy chaps, have you ever had a video game, or anything video game related, invade your dreams? I had my first ever triple jump dream earlier in the week. Tiny Peter was leaving to explore new ventures. He was becoming a rock star, apparently.
Whoa.
And, I know. And he had been charged with finding a new presenter as a surprise for Ben. The next episode of Worst Games Ever was hosted by an annoyed Ben and television's own Nicholas Lyndhurst, as TP thought he would be best to fill the void. I mean, I'd be absolutely flattered to be replaced by Rodney Trotter.
Right, I was just about to Google just so I could get a visual up, but yes, now I'm with you.
What better way to replace the guy who goes by Tiny Peter than with a man who I think is about 6'4" or something, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a very tall man.
Tall guy.
Yeah. Well, I've certainly had a fair few triple jump dreams and video streams, but I wouldn't class those as video game dreams in the same way that Copernicus J Dog would. Because for me, the reason I'm dreaming about those things is because it's stress dreams about work, not because I'm dreaming about video game YouTube channels. So I really had to rack my brains to try and remember if I've had any video game dreams at all. I may have had dreams where I'm just sort of almost in the background of my own dream, I happened to be playing on a console, but I didn't have any like vivid memories of anything specific. And then, but I did remember last night while I was lying in bed thinking, I hope I have a video game dream tonight, so I've got something to talk about. I did actually remember a dream that I had when I was, I don't know, in my mid-teens or something. It was around the time, it was at the time that I'd been playing Tomb Raider Anniversary, which is a great game. It's a remake of the original Tomb Raider game for the anniversary of Lara Croft and her video game series. And I had a dream that Lara Croft was just... We were just eating a family roast dinner together. Like, me and all my family were there, and Tomb Raider's Lara Croft was... She'd just been invited round for tea. I don't know lived in the village or something. Maybe she was new to town, and we said, hey, would you like to come and meet the Austins? It was like completely normal. Nothing happened of note. It was just when I woke up, I thought, well, that was not normal at all. That was like a video game character, sort of semi-animated, really. She was kind of, she wasn't like a live action version of her. She was just sitting there, like kind of not polygonal, because it was a relatively good looking game at the time, although it was PS2. She was there as a CG character, just tucking into some beef or whatever it was. I don't remember what we were eating.
Was she nice?
She was nice. She was very polite. I do remember her at one point asking if someone could pass her the peas.
That's good. That's very Lara. I can hear her say that.
Yeah, with her lovely British accent.
That's my favorite bit from the games.
Yeah, when she asks for the peas.
For peas.
Yeah. But I don't really remember much else. I remember just sort of seeing her eating. She asked for someone to pass the peas. And then she also said, she asked whether me and my brother and sister had school on Monday. And that's all I really remember of the dream. But that's kind of the only notable video game related dream I could think of to answer the question. Other than, as I say, I'm sure there have been dreams where I've maybe just been kind of playing games and then other things have happened. But
right.
Yeah. Right. What about you?
Well, prepare to go on a trip.
Oh, goodness ready? Me. Yeah. I mean, this from the man who often says that he doesn't dream very much, if at all.
So. No, I don't.
But when
he does.
It takes
me a little while to get to sleep. But yeah, usually when I sleep, I wake up and it's like, wow, now it's morning time. And that's it. Nothing's happened in between. So I have a childhood friend called Max. Mm. And his dad was a carpenter by trade and used to fit narrow boats, right? Like canal boats.
Yeah, I think you've told me about him before.
Yeah.
At some point we've done. Yeah.
And at one point they stepped up their business and they actually bought a local boatyard. They owned it.
Wow.
And so his dad would fit the barges there and then sell them. And they had a canal boat because of that trade. And there was one time where I was invited along and we stayed on the canal boat and we went up and down the canal for like a couple of nights.
Nice.
It was amazing. What an experience. And I had my game. We both had our Game Boys. And I've had to look it up. And I think it was Super Mario Land 2, the six golden coins is what it's called.
Right.
And I played this game a lot. And I don't think it was a game that I particularly enjoyed, to be honest. I think it's just I had it and that was it. So I played the hell out of this game. And then when I got back, and I think it was partly sleep deprivation or something else, but I was quite emotional and irritable as a young boy. And every time I closed my eyes, I heard Super Mario Land 2, six golden coins, music and or sounds. And it freaked me out. I felt like there was something going wrong with my brain because all I could hear whenever I closed my eyes was this bloody game. And I had to get my mum to take the cartridge away. Because I didn't want it anywhere near me anymore.
It
accursed me.
That is sort of a recognized phenomenon. There's a thing called the Tetris effect, which you might have heard of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where people who play a lot of Tetris, when they close their eyes, they can just see or kind of, they can't help but imagine or picture Tetris pieces falling and like the different ways they can fit together. And it's not like they're choosing to, necessarily. It's just there. And I actually had this as well. You know, I revealed only very recently in the podcast, it might have been last time or the time before, that for the start of lockdown, I played a lot of Candy Crush.
Yes.
I don't know if I said at the time, it's actually partly because I've got a new phone. And whenever I get a new phone, I get some games on it and play them. And then as soon as the novelty's worn off, I never play mobile games again until I get another phone. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's all by the by. So I played a lot of Candy Crush and I had the same thing where if I shut my eyes or, you know, when I went to bed, I could kind of see the candies and almost hear the music as well. I think it's something that can happen to people, I guess, particularly with 2D fairly basic games. I think it would be a bit weirder if you shut your eyes and you could see, like, you know, The Last of Us or Horizon Zero Dawn playing out across your field of vision. But
I think it's inherently the design, isn't it, of those mobile portable games, is that they're meant to be pick up and play and be as memorable and earwormy as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And abstract shapes and stuff are quite easy to, you can almost see them being formed in the kind of swirly haze that you get when you shut your eyes. Like you can form the shapes out of that kind of nebula. So yeah, I can believe that. Took the cartridge away.
Yeah, well, I gave it up willingly. I was like, Mum, I'm scared, I don't know what's happening. Why can I? So you've got to add Super Mario Land 2, six golden coins up there on the Mount Rushmore of scarred Ben as a child, along with Final Fantasy 7 and Resident Evil 2.
Goodness me.
Just too easily spooked. And it's hard to imagine now, Peter, because of the granite hard man that I've become.
Yeah.
You know? Nothing phases me now.
No.
Strong as an ox. But back then, made of rice paper, me.
I mean, maybe it's all by association as well, because of course Rosie and Jim, who were infamously haunted by the Tickle Monster.
Yes.
They lived
two
on
horror
a
horror icons.
Yeah, they lived on a canal boat. So maybe the time you'd spent there had slightly unhinged you a bit and
it's
allowed
possible.
The cartridge into your brain.
I've been through some big tunnels on a canal boat before. It's very dark.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, there we go. That was more of a nightmare than a dream, but yes, yeah. Super Mario Land. Spooky.
Crikey.
Spooky game.
I'm glad you're okay now.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm doing okay. I'm getting by. Let's move on and talk about stuff that we are currently doing. Yes?
On consoles.
Yeah. What are we playing?
Oh!
It's what we play in time. Peter, what are you... Oh, God, I nearly... What are you playing? Help!
Hey, you okay? How you doing?
I'm fine.
I did what I said I would do. I mean, it wasn't a commitment. I didn't have to follow through with it, but I did it anyway, which is that I've been playing Evercade in bed when I wind down for the night. And, I mean, surely it's only a matter of time before when I shut my eyes, all I can see is, like, Pac-Man. But, you know, for now, I'm okay. I've not been playing a lot of Pac-Man. It's okay. I'll be all right. I've played more Xenocrisis, which is one of those two homebrew... what were they? Dreamcast games? Or I've forgotten.
Oh,
Mega Drive.
Yeah, yeah.
I've already forgotten all of the information I learned like 1 week ago. But they were homebrew Sega games. So there's Xenocrisis and Tanglewood on one cart. And when I first picked that box up, I looked at the two and thought Tanglewood looked more my kind of thing. It was like you play as a fox in a forest. It looked very zen and fun and almost, you know, mascot platformery kind of thing, even though it's 2D. And I thought Xenocrisis just sounded a bit much for me. It sounded a bit like a Metroidvania or something, which I've never really been a fan of. However, it's almost the reverse. And Xenocrisis is just a really simple but action-packed shooter. So it's that twin stick one that I talked about. You don't have sticks on your Evercade, but you use your face buttons and your D-pad. And wow, it's just so much fun. It's just it's as I say, it's kind of mindless, but in a really enjoyable way. It's very satisfying because it's that kind of thing where if you shoot a line of bullets and then just kind of strafe up and down or left and right and just wave your line of bullets around, you'll take out a load of enemies in one go. So you're swarmed by lots of enemies at once, but they're very easy to take down. And there's grenades, and you can dodge roll around really quickly. I've kind of talked about all this before, but I'm just kind of listing all the things I love about this game. And it's very hard not to just quickly boot it up and have another go when I'm just lying in bed. I'm trying to think why, because I had the Interplay cart as well. And what I played more Clay Fighters, which I still can't play. That's the one with the claymation sprites. Like a fighting game, and I've tried to play some Earthworm Jim, and I think later on I'll try and just give it a bit more time and patience. But wow, it's one of those side-scrolling games where you feel like you're passing by loads of stuff above and below you, because it feels like the levels are quite tall, but you just seem to be moving left and right, and you're walking past all these seemingly like different offshoots and you don't know which one is the right one to go to, and I felt a bit overwhelmed. I really love how that game looks, and the animation is beautiful, and it's just very nicely stylized. It's got very much got its own style and its own image, but yeah, I just kind of felt like, oh man, I kind of need to wait until I've got more time to spend on this and actually learn the levels and where I'm going and what I'm doing. But you know, all that aside, very good game, and I am looking forward to playing more of it. I've also played a little bit of Republic Commando, which I've been really enjoying. I've basically finished all the stuff that you do on Geonosis, if I can say it properly, which is The first area, it's that desert planet where the bug people live from the clone Attack of the Clones film. Moving on to that, you then do some stuff. Moving on from that, sorry, you go to a set of levels that are set in space on a ship, a big ship. So I've only played the very beginning of that, but I'm looking forward to playing more because I've heard good things, actually. I've heard good things about those that bit. I did find that the Geonosis stuff was getting a bit samey, just constantly defeating the same enemies over and over. But I'm now thinking at least I won't be fighting any more bug people, probably. I'll probably just get bored of defeating the same other kinds of enemies in the other areas. I think the last bit of the game takes place on Kashyyyk, which is the Wookiee homeworld. So that I'm looking forward to that too. But that's mostly what I've been playing. I've Bit Republic Commando on my console and Evercade in my bed.
Nice. That sounds fun.
Yeah, well, it was. What about you? What have you been playing?
Well, I haven't been playing that much, really. Last weekend, I had a really nice time just sort of watching TV and just, I don't know.
I
played Batman Arkham City, a bit more of that. And the initial shock of what it looks like in 2021, I've overcome that now.
Right, yeah.
And I've settled into actually really enjoying it again. And I did change my character skin because there were a load of pre-order character skins, again, as I've talked about on the podcast. I got very excited. And the only one I could get in the UK, seemingly, from the place I was pre-ordering from was the Dark Knight Returns skin, the Frank Miller graphic novel, a very famous one set in the future where Batman's all old and stuff. And so I read that graphic novel before the game came out just to familiarize myself with it. And I was like, okay, I'm ready. Let's go. I'm going to play as Dark Knight Returns Batman. And the one skin I really wanted but couldn't get, and I'm not even sure that they actually even had it as a pre-order bonus in the UK from a particular outlet, was the animated series Batman. Could get as a skin and play as that. And so I was so excited when I started this up to be able to play as the animated series Batman. It looks terrible. Like, it looks really bad. And I think that's perhaps what was one of the most jarring things about it, is because it's a cartoon art style, obviously it stands out, but also it looks really jagged and rough. Like, the character model just doesn't look very good.
Right.
And so I ended up changing it back to the Dark Knight Returns skin, and it's actually really good. That one has aged really well. It fits in with the sort of dark presentation of the Arkham games. Anyway, it wasn't much longer, actually, after we recorded the last podcast that I unlocked the upgrade for the grappling hook, which means you can double tap X while you're grappling, and then you're shoot up the other side and can immediately glide. That definitely improves traversing the city. And I wasn't sure if this one was even in this game. I thought it might have just been in Arkham Knight. So I'm glad that that's here.
I have just looked up that skin, I should just say, before we move on from it. That animated series skin is not... It's not great.
It's not great, is it?
It looks... Obviously, it's because it's based on an animated thing, as you say. So I'm not... It's not a criticism of the game, but it makes it look like that Worst Games Ever Batman game we played, because it's got this like really rudimentary looking model running around a semi like realistic world. So yeah, I can
imagine. It looks like it's been built out of concentric circles as well.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's like a bad mod that's, you know, someone who sort of knows what they're doing, but not really. That's a shame.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Arkham City still got, I think, the growing pains that were ironed out in terms of traversal in Arkham Knight on the PS4 and Xbox One. Mm-hmm. And of course, the amazing port on PC. But I still think it's just a great game. Like, in terms of the story, you know, the position that Batman's put in, it all takes place over one night, as does Arkham Asylum, obviously. And you just run through this sort of gauntlet of all of Batman's biggest villains, and a lot of whom weren't actually in Arkham Asylum and you didn't see at all. And there's lots of side stuff, so many Easter eggs. Brilliant game. I wish we were getting another Arkham game, to be honest, rather than the sort of live service-y four-player, three-player co-op games that are currently in development at both Rocksteady and Warner Brothers Montreal, I want to say. I'm not entirely sure which studio, but either way, I'm not convinced about those games, and we'll see what they do with them. But yeah, these games were really special, and I would like to see a return to it at some point in the future without the multiplayer stuff. Apart from that, been playing some Persona 4 Golden in bed. I've now reached the really fun point where I am making a note of various status effects and where to get them, so that I can go to that position in a dungeon, just not attack the enemies and hope that they, for example, poison all of my teammates. And then I can spam a button so that at some point my, what's she called, sort of like guiding persona party member will say, oh no, you've been poisoned. And then I can cross that off the list because I'm still going for this ridiculous trophy where I need 250 lines of dialogue. So yeah, doing that, that's fun. A little bit of The Evil Within and some Warzone. And that place is, by the time this is released, Verdansk has been nuked.
Yes, I saw. I saw on the news, on the internet, the game news. Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing the new map, or however new it's going to be.
The
only mode that's available at the time of recording, or at least last night, Wednesday night, was a... The Destruction of Verdansk Part 1 or something. Mm-hmm. And you basically land and immediately, as soon as you die, you become a zombie. And then it's just a case of getting rid of the other humans. But playing as a zombie is really boring because the other zombies can hurt you. And it's just a bit crap, really. And when me and my team did make it to the exfil zone, there was no... I suppose it's the point of the game mode is that they fire the nukes anyway at the end of the match because it's containment and there is no one coming to save you. But there's not even a pat on the back, well done, your team survived to the end. It's just lol, you get the same cutscene and that's it. And that's just so... anyway, we were playing that last night and just complaining the whole time. but thankfully, there are going to be new modes in soon, so we'll see. But
okay. Good.
Maybe I'll return to Warzone a bit more often if we get a new map.
When you're playing as a zombie, do you get a special weapon with your hands or your teeth or something, or you're just carrying a gun but you represent a zombie?
You have a gas grenade,
right?
That sort of replenishes, and you can throw it and it'll make, you know, humans cough and splutter and slow them down a bit. You also have an EMP blast you can set off, I'm assuming, for to get rid of equipment and if enemies are in cars and vehicles and stuff. And yes, you basically just melee. So R2 is you use your little zombie claws, but you can hold down L2 and do a massive leap, like huge leap across the map. But frustratingly, whenever you die, which is really easy because you're made of porridge or whatever.
Yeah.
It spawns you just bloody miles away from all the action. Mm-hmm. And when you get near a human, they can hear you coming a mile away because you're going, and they just turn around and shoot you. And it's like, great, now I've got to spawn on the other side of the map and jump all over it again. It's just not very fun being a zombie.
Because there's different ways that games approach that. Sometimes in that kind of those zombie mode style games, sometimes you do become a zombie with, like claw attacks or whatever. But I remember in Halo, they used to have a game mode called Infected, basically. And I think the implication was you were a zombie. I don't know if it used to say new zombie when someone became a zombie. So you were supposed to be a zombie, but all that happened is your armor went like green or sort of, you know, bile color, and then you were given a sword, which is not very zombie-like.
Right.
So some games do it like that, where they're like, yeah, you're a quote-unquote zombie, and you need to infect the other players, but all you really are is just you've got a certain weapon and maybe some special abilities, but like you don't feel like a zombie.
Well, you do look and sound like a zombie in this,
okay,
but you do have a permanent UAV, so you can see where all the humans are at all times. On
as
the map.
Zombies do, they've
of
all
course,
got UAVs.
Yeah, they know that. I mean, kudos to Treyarch for combining, and the other various Activision studios working on it, for combining both the Zombieverse and the Warzoneverse, because zombies have been popping up for a few months now, quite a while, in various specific locations. But now it seems like the storyline is zombies have overrun Verdansk and they need to nuke it.
Right.
And that's the story here, which is fun, but the game mode turned out to actually not be that much fun. But it seems like it was just for last night, because by the time we were wrapping up, they got rid of that mode.
Oh.
And there's just a load of modes on Rebirth Island, as it's called, which is that sort of extra tiny Warzone map that I mentioned before, but set before some kind of nukes went off, which is weird because it turns out we've been playing in the destroyed version for the better part of a year, and now we get to play in it pre-disaster. So there's one part of it that's that was like a building site, and in this version is a full-on building that's never been there before, and it's also at night. So it's they're doing cool things. I just thought the zombie stuff was crap. So I'm looking forward to when it's all, they've said apparently it's going to be a week of mayhem. So I don't know what that means, but I'll check in when the new map's done and maybe give that a go.
Right. Oh, well, good. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, so do I, man. I need it.
We've got a question, though, in the meantime.
Have we?
Needs asking and answering.
Okay, let's see what Samuel Benson's got to say. Samuel Benson says, at what point do you give up on a game? I know this might be different for you as video game journalists. That's right. Shout it from the rooftop so our mums can hear us.
Mm.
But do you have a certain time requirement before you give up on a game? Cheers, lads.
I certainly don't have a hard and fast rule to answer this question. It massively varies. It depends why I'm giving up. Like, you know, if it's, there's various reasons to give up on a game. I guess I'll go into those after. It also depends how much of the game is left. If I'm kind of feeling like, is it giving up time? Oh, well, maybe not, because there's only like an hour to go, or there's 6 hours to go, or there's 40 hours to go. And I guess also what has to factor in is what else I could be doing with that time, either playing a different game that maybe I'm looking forward to moving on to, or something non-gaming entirely. Like if there's a TV show I'm enjoying that I want to binge, or you know, whatever. So there's all kinds of factors that, you know, kind of go into the equation. I think the closest thing to a general rule I can come up with is that I either give up quite soon into a game if I immediately decide it's not for me, or once I get past that point, I tend to not give up on games for the most part. I will kind of see them through. So I think I have like this threshold moment after, again, it depends on the ultimate size of the game, how long I give it. But, you know, maybe a couple of hours in, and then I'll think, is this for me? Am I enjoying this? And if I am, then I'll probably carry on to the end. But as I say, it depends partly why I'm giving up. Is it because the game is overwhelmingly large, but still a good game? Or is it because I don't think the game is very good? Or as I say, is it because there's another game out there that I really want to play right now, and this one I'm playing right now is good, but that one is more highly anticipated? So it's hard to give one answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only other thing to say is that some games I do actually start them almost knowing that I don't have the intention to complete them. Or, you know, I'm not refusing to allow myself to complete them if I decide I want to, of course. But, like, for example, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I knew that I wouldn't finish that game. And I don't just mean I knew I wouldn't 100% it. I was pretty sure I wouldn't even finish the story. I knew what I was getting into. And I thought, obviously, if this really does grab me, of course I'm going to finish it. But I know what I'm getting into with Assassin's Creed games. And I thought, what I want to do is see the world that they've created, learn a bit about the story and the characters and stuff, and yeah, maybe it'll make me want to finish it, but I'm going into this knowing full well that I probably won't want to, because I know what Assassin's Creed games are, and ultimately they're not quite for me, not in terms of completing a story. So yeah, all kinds of things go into that decision, really, and it depends, it varies massively from game to game for me.
Yeah, no, for me, it's, I can usually tell quite quickly if I don't really like a game.
Yeah.
And this set of rules that I sort of have for deciding whether or not I like a game tends to change massively depending on whether I got it, whether I paid for the game or whether I got it for free, either borrowing it or getting it through PlayStation Plus, for example. I'm far less likely to give a game its dues or time to sort of really get into it if I haven't actually paid out of pocket for it myself.
Right.
So the last time that happened for me with a game that I did pay for was Star Wars Squadrons, or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah.
The dogfighting sim game from last year. And was it Squadrons? Was that it?
Yeah, Squadrons.
Yeah, I just didn't like it at all. And I knew fairly quickly that I just wasn't having fun with it. And so I just sort of abandoned it. But a lot of time we'll you know, maybe get a game through, again, PlayStation Plus or whatever, that is part of your subscription. So you've technically paid for it, but it's, you know, it's just there and it comes out. Mm. And I'll download it. And if I'm not hugely excited about it anyway, and I play it for maybe half an hour to an hour, and I can usually tell pretty fast, like, do I want to keep playing it? I don't know that I do. And so I sort of just sack it off. But yeah, that's really what it comes down to for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, did I pay for it? And am I even enjoying it? Because there's a point where you do have to cut your losses, even if you did pay money. It's like the... What is it? The sunk cost fallacy?
Sunk cost, yeah.
Where it's like, it doesn't matter. Look, you're already not having fun. Why put 30 more hours into it?
Yeah.
Why do that? You just got to walk away.
It's like throwing good money after bad, or throwing good enjoyment time after bad money. You know, yes. I'm with you on Squadrons, by the way. I finished it mostly just because it's Star Wars and I wanted to see what happened, but it wasn't. For me, it wasn't that good, but it was its own. It was partly the genre, I think. It was like it was a flight sim game, is what it was. There were all those different controls and stuff, and
that's it. Yeah,
I think a lot of people found the same thing where they thought, "Oh, I just kind of want to be able to just use both my sticks and maybe a face button and a shoulder button and be able to just fly this ship and do fun things with it." And it was
third person camera, please.
Yeah, third person camera would have made a lot of difference.
I'd love to be able to control it in more of an arcadey way, but never mind. There we are. But yeah, that's it. I think there's a point to be made that if you're not having fun, don't feel like you need to stick with a game. And even if it's a game that everyone else loves, it's okay to just accept that maybe it's not for you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do ultimately confuse that perspective for, well, it's crap because I didn't like it, so it's crap. But it's okay for there to be a game that you can appreciate is really good, but it's just not for you. Happens all the time. Lots of games like that I've not enjoyed. Red Dead Redemption 2 being a prime example.
Yeah.
Just couldn't get into it. Doesn't mean I think the game's crap. It's clearly magnificent. It's just not for me. So there we are. Peter.
Yeah. Hmm.
Are you ready for something a bit strange?
Where's... Oh, no. Where I tidied up here in the week. Oh, on the weekend.
That's what you get for tidying.
Hang on. I've got a wrapper here.
This is ridiculous. A wrapper for what?
A Nature Valley bar.
Oh, make sure it's got no crumbs left in
it. No, I'm holding it in a careful way.
Okay. It's time for weird news.
Nature Valley.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Peter, it's time for weird news. What weird news do you have for me this time?
I've got some kind of good news, weird news, weird good news.
Okay.
It's a happy story. It's still weird, or it's like, oh, right, this is strange, but
bizarre.
It's a good thing. I desperately tried to find a write-up about this anywhere but Kotaku, because I'm just always resorting to Kotaku. Well, we both are to an extent, but you know, we both deviate now and then, and I try to, but all the other ones I could find were very long. I didn't want to have to sit there and like edit it down for a read, so I've gone for the Kotaku one because it's nice and potted and short and clipped. So thank you, Riley McLeod, for prescription video game could help people who've had COVID.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually, this is almost a follow-up, this story, as outlined in the first paragraph. I don't know how we didn't get this when it was first a story for weird news, but this prescription video game is already a thing. This was written about like some time ago, and only now. Oh, it was last June. So wow, that is quite a while ago, actually. Anyway, I'll read it. But this is weird news that we should have caught at the time when we didn't. Researchers are testing whether a video game can help treat the cognitive effects of COVID-19. A study uses the game Endeavor RX, which last June became the first video game requiring a prescription to play. And there's a link there to Kotaku's write-up of that. Endeavor RX is currently used to treat children with ADHD. As reported by The Verge, Weill Cornell Medicine neuropsychologist Faith Gunning is, that's just a collection of words, isn't it? is testing the game on adults who've experienced cognitive difficulties after having had COVID-19. These symptoms can include difficulties with attention and memory. We don't think everyone who's recovering from COVID-19 needs cognitive intervention, Gunning told The Verge, but there is enough data that suggests that a significant number of people who have suffered from COVID-19 will have some cognitive issues. Gunning noted that one of the strengths of a game-based intervention is that it can be more engaging than traditional methods, which she said can be boring. That's a quote.
Right, okay.
Whether the game itself is any fun is probably a matter of personal taste, says Kotaku, especially given its audience of kids. But gaming has seen a huge leap in popularity during the pandemic, helping people stay connected to each other or deal with being sick. A video game is also scalable, Gunning said. It's something that can be given to lots of people. We need things we can get out into the community. Even if it's a small subset of people who've had COVID-19, the sheer number of people who've had COVID-19 means we need interventions that are effective and can be disseminated widely. So there you go. Not only is there a prescription video game out there as of last June, but it's now being tested as a kind of post-COVID treatment for people with cognitive issues as a result.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Nice. Video games. Look at that.
Weird news.
Saving the world.
It's not all bad news here at Weird News. It just mostly is.
No, it's not. My weird news is also not necessarily bad news.
Good. Well, tell me all about it.
I will. I was just pausing for dramatic effect, and also my brain just sort of froze. It did that little YouTube buffering symbol for a second there. Could you hear it? Could you hear that sort of?
I heard the 3 hour Vista, pause boot up sound effect.
Yeah, my brain. It's nearly ready. PC gamer, this is Stephen Mesner. Mm-hmm. This hobbit baked millions of pies to hit max level in Lord of the Rings Online.
Right, okay.
Are you ready to learn more?
Yeah, where's this from, sorry?
This is PC Gamer.
PC Gamer, okay.
The Lord of the Rings Online has been around for 14 years, and in that time, players have slain countless orcs, goblins, and the occasional Balrog. Naturally, the MMO gravitates towards the more adventurous and violent aspects of Tolkien's universe, but one player has managed to reach level 130 in the most hobbit way possible, baking millions of pies.
Wow.
His name is Cooking with Sim, and he's a hobbit on the Evernight server. Every day, for the past 8 months, Cooking with Sim has been either in the kitchen or out collecting ingredients to make pies, using the pittance of experience points you get to slowly inch his way towards max level. It's a mission that would have likely required baking at least a million pies.
Oh.
This remarkable achievement happened about 9 days ago, with players gathering in-game to celebrate as Cooking with Sim earned the final bit of the 205,829,281 XP he needed to bake across the finish line. That mini-celebration was then shared on the Lord of the Rings Online subreddit, where other players marvelled at Cooking with Sim's persistence. I feel the only way Tolkien would have approved more is if you could level through storytelling, wrote one player. To the oven and back, a hobbit's tale, wrote another. It goes on.
Can I just say, Tolkien would have no opinion on...
No, Tolkien wouldn't understand.
He wouldn't understand, and even if he did understand, I think he would think it was probably sacrilegious, given that, like, Lord of the Rings is rooted in Western European folklore and, like, tradition, and now it's been turned into a video game where you can bake pies, and people on Reddit can talk about how everyone gathered together on server 195 or whatever the fuck.
What's Reddit?
Steady, I nearly swore
there. Why wouldn't you bake a pie in real life? I don't understand. Who are you and what are you wearing? What's going on? So we don't know exactly how many pies it took to get to level 130, but they explain they were frequently baking them in batches of 10,000 to 15,000, which really tested the limits of bag and vault space. Though the XP per pie depended on a few factors, players will only typically earn about 50 XP per crafted item. That'd require around 4 million pies.
Wow.
So there we go. Absolutely insane. What a lovely sounding game. I wish I could just go. I'm looking at screenshots of it and it looks exactly how I would imagine it to look.
Mm-hmm.
Something I don't want to play.
Yeah.
Here are the players celebrating the pie. The pilestone.
I don't understand why anyone would do this. Like, I also applaud the persistence, but, you know, it's the same as, like,
soup.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, okay, congratutions on not going mad. Or maybe you did, the fact that you've done this at all.
This might be it. This is clearly a crazy challenge that Cooking with Sim has given themselves. Mm. And I hope they had fun.
But I hope they had fun too.
I would do. If it takes 8 months, you know, of playing every night.
Just baking
pies. It's something to do, but it's got to be really monotonous. You know, you're not trying to get to level 130 as fast as possible by doing quests and killing things, which would at least offer some variety. It's like that bit from the South Park episode where they play World of Warcraft and they're just killing the hogs over and over again to level up.
Yeah.
God, I can't
believe that. It's the monotony. That's what I'm... Yeah. It's madness.
Bloody hell.
Better move on to question three.
Yeah.
This is from Michael Malan, or possibly Malan.
Michael Mellon.
Greetings, comrades. With the recent news of Sony's reversal on removing the storefront for PS3/Vita, as well as other stories like the famous Sonic movie redesign, it feels like we're in a new social media era where where everyday gamer voices, it says, have much more power. My question is this. Do you think, long-term, this will be a good thing or even a lasting thing? Thank you, Michael. It's a good question.
Thank you, Michael.
Sorry for taking the mic about the one word where you accidentally missed a letter.
I hope your melons are okay.
Yeah. So this is what I stopped myself going into when we were chatting in the intro about PlayStation storefronts. Mm. So I kind of feel like... This is a strange situation, because although I've kind of facetiously said, I've talked about lies that were told, I don't think they were lies. I think they obviously had every intention of taking down the storefronts, and then they realised, oh God, we're in trouble, we better not do it. And then they went back on it. It's a U-turn, it's not a lie. So, you know, as Michael says, is this a good thing? That now, if we do put this kind of pressure on these companies, that we can kind of get our way in some sense. I think ultimately it could be a good thing, but only because, or only if, such companies are able to separate what I admittedly very subjectively call the good voices and the bad voices.
Right.
If Naughty Dog had listened to everything that was said in the wake of The Last of Us Part 2, goodness knows what they would do next. You know, they would make a game about a white man going round finding women to have sexual intercourse with or something, you know, a straight person.
I think you're describing The Witcher 3, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it. They would have made The Witcher 4. Now, of course, I don't have anything against them making a game about a straight white man. Of course I don't. You know, I like Uncharted. However, my point is not that that would be a horrible game to play. My point is that it's horrible to say that a game that's not like that is bad because it's got lesbians of colour in it or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it worries me in some ways that if people shout loud enough, they get their way in this new social media era. However, I do think that hopefully, as I say, these companies are actually able to separate certain voices from others. Now, you know, I kind of feel funny about saying that because who am I to say what is the right and wrong thing? I mean, maybe bigotry is not the right thing. I'm just putting that out there. Maybe that is wrong. Maybe I'm okay going on record saying that that's a bad thing.
Sexism is bad.
Yeah, but...
What a brave stance.
But, you know, in by the same token, like, you know, to an extent, everyone's entitled to free speech, and so it's not for me to silence anyone who has an opinion that's different to mine. But, yeah, I think on balance, it could be a good thing that... as a community, people can say, we think this is a bad decision. Sonic looks terrible. Why have you given him teeth like that? Why are you not preserving video games like this? So it's good if we're getting positive results from that. The downside is that you still have other ways in which people can respond to certain decisions made. So it's not just about discourse on social media. You can have review bombing and things like that. So that's always going to be an issue, I think. I don't know if we're ever really going to get away from review bombing. Ultimately what I'm saying really is that I think it comes down to whether Sony, for example, or anyone else is able to sort out what is and isn't worth listening to. And that's, in some ways, that's a tricky thing to do. Yeah, okay, it's easy to get rid of the really horrible stuff that's fueled by prejudice. But once you've cleared all that out, you're still left with a whole mix of opinions and voices. And, you know, there's not always a majority when these things are being discussed. So, I don't know. It's worrying in some ways. I've some optimism, I've some pessimism. I don't really know how I feel about the social media world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As was the case with The Last of Us Part 2, that was the creative vision of Naughty Dog and Neil Druckmann and all the creative team and the people who worked on that game. And so the negative response and reaction to it was quite fairly overruled / ignored because that was the game that they wanted to make and that's how they decided to make it. And you don't really have any right to...
Yeah.
To sort of get them to change anything. However, that was also a mix of opinions where there was a very, very loud minority who were complaining And the vast majority enjoyed it and thought it was fantastic. But they weren't complaining. It's exactly the same reason why you go on things like, I don't know, Glass Doors, that website where you can review employers.
Yeah.
Or when you go to, I don't know, what's another one? What's like a food review? What's the food reviewing one? Yelp. That's the one, isn't it?
Yelp.
Where usually people only log on to leave reviews when they're mad.
Mm.
And so it isn't necessarily a reflection of how most people feel. But equally, this has happened in the past with Mass Effect 3's ending, infamously.
Yeah, true.
It was bad. I don't think there were many people who said, yes, that was good. But I think there was more of a divide between people who really wanted it changed and people who were just like, I'm not that arsed. It is what it is.
Mm.
And they did end up patching in a slightly different ending. So that can, you know, people made a difference there. Infamous 2, infamously, completely redesigned the protagonist, Cole. And people hated it. Like, that doesn't even look like the same guy. They replaced the voice actor, for one. And then they just completely redesigned him. Didn't look anything like the same guy. And they ended up responding to criticism and slightly adjusting him and changing it. This also appeared to happen with the Demon's Souls remake. They slightly redesigned the Flame Lurker boss in a trailer pre-release. And people were like, I'm not really sure how I feel about that. And then in the final version, the design of the boss was far more in line with how it looked in the original game.
Dante as well, Devil May Cry.
Yes.
Had a certain misstep that we don't talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it does happen. And people, as you say, are welcome to voice their concerns and frustrations. It will ultimately, as you say, come down to outlets, companies, publishers, developers, whatever, being able to see through what is valid criticism and what is just hot air, essentially. In fact, this week, very publicly, the whole European Super League thing was sort of announced and ultimately backed down from by several, in fact, I think all of the top flight Premier League clubs that were going to join it. So it does make a difference. But what happens when it's flipped around? What happens when it's, you know, trying not to get political here, obviously, because that's never fun or really conducive to anything when talking about video games. But certainly, it seemed that it was, with The Last of Us Part II, it was people, let's say, on the right of the political spectrum that had
generally
issue with it. But now we're faced with a situation where we've got 6 days. Is it 6 days in Fallujah? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact wording.
Yeah.
Which is largely being called out by the left. And I am not educated enough, really, to feel comfortable giving an opinion on this either way, which I think is a perfectly valid stance.
Yeah.
But it, like, what happens then? Do the people on the left side of the political spectrum, which is, I think, is fairly transparent, where both you and I identify as landing, is it fair that they are able, if this comes off, that they might have the power on social media to get this game completely cancelled, and those people's creative visions will never see the light of day? Is that fair? I don't know. It's very grey. The topic, obviously, is very different because 6 Days in Fallujah is based on a real thing and The Last of Us Part II is not. But, like, is it fair? I think the same conversation still applies. And it's very complicated. And it still ultimately comes down to whether developers want to go through with what they believe is in the best interest of the creative product that they're making versus societal pressure, even if that is quote unquote right or quote unquote wrong.
Yeah, and I think you can cause frustration within an audience by sometimes giving them certain victories, like in this instance with Sony. You know, I think obviously everyone's pretty pleased with the final result that, you know, here we are, the stores are staying live. But, you know, in their statement, they said, thank you for sharing your feedback with us. We're always listening. Now, to say that we're always listening, and then to, in almost every other aspect, ignore cries out for video game preservation. You know, you said yourself about the PlayStation Classics that have been started to be removed. And, you know, there's an ongoing issue with backwards compatibility, which I don't think will... I mean... if I think seriously about it, I don't think they're ever really going to address backwards compatibility, certainly not as far back as PS1 and PS2 kind of era. So it could almost cause more frustration by saying, hey, you know, you guys spoke out on social media, we listened, we made a decision, here's what we're doing because of you. And then everything else that those people might ask for, things that might be shared by a huge majority of fans, for those things to then go unheeded, that can be difficult, a bitter pill to swallow, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So, and obviously I extrapolated that to sort of the extreme there of like what complaining and campaigning against certain things in the video game industry can lead us to. It can lead to games being outright cancelled. Like it genuinely can. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. Depending on the project, it's difficult to say, really. It's very complicated. But people do have power. They really do.
Yeah.
And developers and publishers don't always listen. But sometimes they do. And sometimes it's for the better. Sometimes it's kind of pointless. And sometimes it could arguably be seen as not being particularly good. But who knows, eh? Who actually knows? Hopefully, no one was particularly upset by that conversation, because I know that, as I said, politics really, it just doesn't help a lot of the time, does it?
Yeah.
It just leads to frustration, and, you know, you're listening to a podcast and you can't talk back at us, and it's, anyway, hopefully people will understand where we were coming from there. But yeah, you do have a voice and you can exercise it, and sometimes you will be listened to. But equally, they have every right to not listen to you.
And sometimes they might listen to you, but not really be humble or show any humility in their change of decision. So I saw Owen from Cultaholic retweeted the statement made by Liverpool, going back to the Super League thing. And it was just something like, you know, despite having made plans to, you know, like join the Super League, we have now cancelled those plans or something. And that's all it said. There was no apology. There may well have been, you know, a clickable link or something to go to a bigger statement. I know we're talking about football here, not video games, but it's all big companies sometimes need to think very hard about, don't just do your U-turn and make the right decision. You then need to maybe kind of address where you were going in the first place and what you were thinking. Because as I say, Liverpool, there was no apology. And no kind of, thank you for your ongoing support. We will always be for the fans. And, you know, it's a bit like saying, we were planning on committing armed robbery on that bank. We're going to go in with a gun and, like, take a load of cash out of the vaults. And now we're not going to. And they're expecting some kind of applause for that, you know. I was going to do a bad thing, and now I won't. So
we're always listening,
and we'll maybe not do more armed robbery in the future.
We'll think about it.
Maybe we'll plan it and then again decide on balance. Maybe not. Anyway, we're great.
Yes, so. We are great. Thank you for being here. You must all let us know what you think about that and the power of social media. It can be powerful. It can be dangerous. It really can.
Yeah.
Social media is largely a blight on society. I don't think many people would argue with that. Sometimes it can be used for good, sometimes not so much. When it comes to video games, change can be affected. It really can.
Yeah,
well,
right.
From one big discussion to to another.
I know. I've just found some paper as well.
Oh, well, nice one. Where was that?
Just on the floor. I must have missed
brilliant.
It.
Brilliant. Nice job cleaning, Peter.
Yeah, it was behind the desk. Yeah.
Let's move on then. It's time for the big discussion.
Big discussion.
Big discussion time. This big discussion's pretty chill, Peter.
It is.
Should be quite a nice chat, and it comes via Quetzal, I'm going to say Angel. Does that seem correct to you? There's a little accent on
there.
There is,
yeah.
Quetzal Angel.
It says angel, but only if you.
Quetzal Angel.
Quetzal Angel, yeah.
Thank you, Quetzal. Very much for your big discussion question. Hello, Ben and Peter. I really enjoy all the content you have put out over the years. My question is, which games do you think have the best free roam? I recently played Infamous Second Son, and the game is fun, but I found the city a little less fun to explore than its predecessors on PS3. Keep up the good work. All the love.
Oh, well, I mean, I kind of wasn't sure what angle to take this question from, because I think there are different ways to enjoy roaming around an open world. I think sometimes it's about how you get around. And a good example of that would be the Spider-Man games, Marvel Spider-Man and Miles Morales. I don't think I've ever had more fun traversing an open world than I have in those games, purely because of the, you know, the web swinging. New York, it looks great in that game. It's not the most beautiful video game open world I've ever been in, because it's just a, you know, it's an urban landscape, and
apart from when the sun's setting.
Oh well, I mean, it
then
can
it's
look,
the most beautiful.
It can look very beautiful, and it can be very interesting to explore all the little nooks and crannies. But when you're whizzing through it at high speed, again, I'm not saying it's not good looking. It's good looking, but it's not like, you know, my number one most beautiful world to roam around. But it's probably the most fun way to get around a world. On the other hand, it can be what happens to you as you are moving around the world. So while I think that Oblivion is maybe one of the most beautiful Bethesda RPG open worlds in the past couple of decades, really, I think Skyrim, despite being more bleak, you know, it's got more of those sort of radiant things, those random encounters and interesting things that can happen to you when you're walking along, especially when you're new to the game. I think that really is what took my breath away more than anything else with the likes of Skyrim. And I think Red Dead Redemption as well had similar things, where you're just exploring the world, you're on your way to a quest or to a town or something, and you just bump into someone on the road who tries to mug you or says, take this and don't give it to the guard or whatever, or you know, someone's attacking a caravan or something like that. And that kind of thing, I think, can really factor into the enjoyment you get from exploring an open world. You know, if it feels alive, if it feels rich, if you know that, you know, I could fast travel to my destination, but maybe I want to walk there and just see what I encounter. There's definitely something to be said for that. But yeah, again, then when it comes to just actual beauty, I think Oblivion is still always up there in my sort of top three. Maybe it's still my number one. I don't know.
I've got Oblivion on my list as well.
Yeah, it's just so zen and beautiful. And
the
music and even just the sound effect of like the wind blowing through. There's something about that. Kind of reminds me of my childhood when I grew up in the country.
In Cyrodiil,
yeah. Not that I grew up in a kind of a, what's the word, coniferous forest, mountainous region surrounding a large lake, but just that kind of hillside, and I don't know, it's such a lovely place to be. And the music helps.
Really nice. I made a note of a number of them, so I don't know if you have any more, but feel free to just jump in and weigh in as and when. But yeah, I also sort of twisted the question slightly. Not so much. I didn't just keep it to open world games necessarily.
Right. Okay.
Just games that I thought were just a joy to explore. So not maybe joy isn't the operative word, but I will always be in awe of the level design and the way you make your way through Dark Souls.
Right, yeah.
I think the way that loops back on itself, the fact that you start off and you have three different directions that you can go in. One of them is recommended, and the other two are, one of them's a dead end, the other one is really hard for the start of the game, but you can go where you want, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you defeat bosses and you come back around a corner and you go through a gate and it's like, oh my God, I'm here on the other side of that gate. I'm in the corridor where I was earlier. This is and the bonfire's just down there. This is amazing. It's brilliant, and you can see areas that you get to later on. And they really nailed that, and it was such a loss in Dark Souls 2 not having Miyazaki and his team involved, because they try to do that same thing where you spot stuff off in the distance, but it just doesn't line up at all, like not even close to lining up. And you can tell when you play the game. You don't need to basically take the camera anywhere we like to try and find new secrets and discoveries in some of our favorite games. Like, you can genuinely tell there's a tower over there. You go down a staircase in a tunnel. Then you walk through a really long tunnel where it's clearly just loading the next area. You walk out. And it's just not even... Basically, they just put JPEGs of areas you'll go to later on the skyline. And it's just a bit crap, and it's such a shame. Whereas in Dark Souls, it all actually lines up and it's really cleverly designed and all makes sense. But anyway, in terms of some actual open worlds, Far Cry 3, on a similar level that Oblivion is lush and green and beautiful, Far Cry 3 is a beautiful open world.
Mm.
It's so lovely and so nice to explore as well, especially when you get the wingsuit and you can just jump off a ledge and just zoom around in your wingsuit. It's brilliant. And I think it did actually end up getting ported to PS4 and Xbox One and stuff. I may be wrong.
That was like the fourth thing I was so, you know, in terms of getting around, what happens when you're exploring, how beautiful the world is. The fourth thing that I actually wrote, I forgot to say, is the toys that you've got to play with to kind of, you know, have a sandbox to play in. You know, you've got like GTA has some of the more interesting vehicles, like there's that dump truck and, you know, you can get a tank or whatever, and that can add a whole extra level to free roaming. And things like Just Cause as well, with like grappling hooks and little rockets and all sorts of things. You know, I found that even with Mercenaries, which was not again, not a particularly beautiful or at least not a very unique open world, but being able to call in helicopters and like cool cars and stuff, just having those at your fingertips kind of added a whole dimension to it that you wouldn't necessarily have had if you'd just been walking around it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I totally agree.
So the wingsuit is definitely something.
Wingsuit's so good. And that game as well with Vaas and stuff, still the best, one of the best villains in games.
Yeah.
Certainly puts the rest of the Far Cry games to shame, for sure, as much as Troy Baker tried his best and whoever else has played the other ones. I'm looking forward to seeing what Giancarlo Esposito can do in Far Cry 6 whenever that ends up coming out.
It's a pretty compelling teaser. So
yeah, he's brilliant. But thing is, so's Troy Baker. Like, Troy Baker's excellent as well, but they just gave him very little to work with. I think he just wasn't around enough. That was the problem. And I can only imagine how expensive Mr. Esposito is to bring in for a game. So God knows, we may get an intro cutscene and an outro cutscene, and that's it. And we just hear people talking about how frightening he is, but we never see him, which would be a bit crap. But that's hopefully possible. Not. Hopefully it's not that. Another one I've got on here is Ghost of Tsushima, a relatively recent one. That world is gorgeous. It's so varied and beautiful, and I don't know how to put it. Like, it's lovingly crafted. You can go from the cherry blossom trees all the way up to the snowy mountains, down to a serene lake, and then like to the other end of the island, it's snowing and there's like the waves crashing on the beach, and all around are dotted all of these side activities that you can do, and they all feel sort of themed appropriately, like cutting through the bamboo. The duels in particular are always in beautiful locations. So one of them is, I think, on like a large rock underneath a waterfall next to the sea. And it's just such a stylish game, and it's so beautiful. And it was such a joy to explore, especially with your horse that you get to name as well.
Yeah.
Excellent game, beautiful open world. They really outdid themselves there. And it was a joy to just be in that game, in that world. So nice. I've actually got a GTA game that I imagine a lot of people won't pick, which is GTA 4.
Yeah.
Because that game is like, it's the camera smeared in Vaseline. It's kind of grim and grey and a bit manky looking.
But it feels grounded, doesn't it?
It feels like, real, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're actually in a believable city, which is it's kind of ironic because I think that's sort of what they felt they made with the likes of GTA 5. You know, look at this vibrant living city that we've made. And yeah, of course, it's a brilliant simulation of an urban environment, but I know all GTA games really have had that parody aspect to them, where they're clearly mocking all kinds of, you know, aspects of modern living and stuff. But GTA 5 felt a little bit more towards that wacky kind of, oh wow, yeah, it's GTA, whoa. Whereas GTA 4, although it still had plenty of, you know, little nods and wink nudges and funny brand names, it did just feel a bit more a bit more believable and real and mm-hmm. grounded.
I have such fond memories of playing that game, especially the online and jumping into a private server with three or four friends and then just like making our own games up and stuff. It was really good fun. Like I do really like that game and I love that city. I uphold that I think it might have the best intro theme music of any of the games. another two very quickly, the Final Fantasy VII Overworld, which is displayed weirdly, and I'm very interested to see how they tackle this in the remake, if indeed they even get there, where you're basically just a sprite of Cloud running around, like you're a giant basically running around this open map. But there's so many things to interact with and see, like little houses that you can go in and talk to NPCs who sell weird items or complete like side quests, but the side quests aren't marked like in a side quest menu or anything. They'll just say vaguely like, oh, have you come across this thing? And then if you bring it back to them, they'll say something, or they'll warn you about something that comes up later in the game, and then you can go back and talk to them, and they'll have something new to say. Like, I love that. And the map, the open map music, which I think basically is a remix of the Final Fantasy VII main theme anyway, is also beautiful. I think music plays a huge part in exploring these open worlds, and it's such a shame that I couldn't get into Breath of the Wild, because I know that that's a big one for people. They love that open world that's in Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, of course. That's well worth a mention.
So, I mean, there's tons. You know, The Witcher 3, people love that too. There's so many excellent open worlds, and we would love to hear some of yours.
Yeah.
If you'd like to get in touch and let us know what your favorite open worlds are. Do you have anything else you want to say, Peter?
Well, actually, there's only... I just thought then when you were talking about music. One that I think, if memory serves, didn't have any music or much music anyway while you were not in a quest. If you were just exploring, it was Dragon's Dogma, which was a game that I actually really enjoyed. It was a bit of a... It felt a bit big and a bit like much to handle, and there was very limited fast travel, actually, despite there being this very large, seemingly sprawling open world. And quite often as well, not only would you have to run to places wherever you wanted to go, but you would encounter loads and loads of groups of enemies, which would take a while to defeat. So from that point of view, it did sometimes feel like a bit of a chore to get around. But it was very beautiful, and the good thing about that game, of course, kind of one of its USPs, not so unique anymore, but at the time, it was one of the only games where you could kind of grapple onto enemies, climb up them and stab them in the face and stuff, you know, big like cyclopses and griffins and stuff. And you could be running along and at any moment, seemingly, that like a cyclops would be round the corner or something would land from the sky and... there was something quite grand and epic about that. You felt quite heroic wandering around this world that was fairly typical fare in terms of Western fantasy. But the fact that it was filled with these monsters that could, you know, kind of appear whenever, there was something about it that it was always... You always felt like you were on adventure, I think, with that game. And maybe that's why they had, like, as I say, limited fast travel. There was a bit, but you could only... go between like a couple of points. I think there was music when certain combat encounters happened, but I seem to remember when you're just sort of running around and crossing fields and stuff, there wasn't a great deal happening. But that's an example that proves that you don't always need the music to kind of have a good world to explore.
Yeah,
sometimes it can just be carried by the overall feel of the place. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And I'm certain that there's just so many brilliant open worlds that we've neglected to mention because so many studios have done them so well and put their own spin on it. But yes, do let us know.
Let us know.
Peter's now going to tell you the various ways you can find us and get in touch with us if you want to.
Yes, I am. We're at Team Triple Jump, wherever you look. YouTube.com. and twitch.tv/teamtriplejump. That's where we do our streams and videos. Remember, if you've got Amazon Prime, one of the benefits of that is that there's a kind of a free Twitch sub bundled with that. So you could maybe spend that on us. When we're streaming on both Twitch and YouTube, we're modded by Lord Rotovich, Madsterdactyl, and Trowling Badger. Our social media is twitter.com/teamtriplejump. Luke Eldon looks after Facebook for us. Patreon.com/teamtriplejump is how you can access our Patreon and look at all of our different rewards and tiers available. We've now got some handier links. If you want to go to our Discord server, it's triplej.mup, that's triplej.mp/discord. Oh. That's nice, isn't it? And that's modded by Jack, Joe, and now Hollowyes. So everyone, welcome Hollowyes to the modding team over on Discord.
Absolutely.
The podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, can be accessed very handily in audio form at triplju.mp/podcast. Oh, there you go. Of course, triplju.mp, full stop, I mean, not with a full stop, but just that, is our website. So you can go there to see what we're getting up to and so on. We've got a careers tab, and that's well worth a look. We've got the new shop as well, which is triplejumpshop.com. You can follow at triplejumpshop on Twitter to stay updated. We've had some chats this week with our merch team, haven't we, Ben, about some new shirts and a new pin, and or maybe a couple of new pins. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I don't think it'll be too long now before the next drop comes. So definitely follow Triple Jump Shop on Twitter, and keep an eye on the URL and on the channel, of course. Finally, triplej.mup/VODs will take you to our VODs channel on YouTube, where all of our VODs get uploaded, and where Pat puts together weekly highlights of our streams.
Yes, absolutely. You can follow Peter on Twitter and Instagram at ThatPeterAustin, and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday. Monday and Friday being the solo streams on Twitch, Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube. Worst games ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. It's not a worst games ever week this week. The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows once every other week or thereabouts, something like that anyway. Leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps, something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. This week, besides all the stuff I just mentioned, we've got him. We got him. Oh boy, yeah. We got him. She Says is basically taking his opinion on Dragon Quest V anywhere he wants. And
Namely our channel.
And he's going to tell us all about it in the new episode of What It Means to Me. She
one
says,
of our favourite creators.
Exactly. From Boundary Break, he will be. He already has taught us all about Dragon Quest V. So make sure you go watch that video that went out yesterday on the channel at the time of release. There's something else going out tomorrow, Peter.
Absolutely. We've got a new ranked list coming out. Those of you who've been keeping an eye on the YouTube community tab will have already seen what's coming up. It's every Superman game ranked from worst to best. And when we say every, we mean actually all of them, not like half of them. I'm saying nothing more. But it's very good. It's well worth a look. And of course, written by Philip, as usual, who does an incredible job.
Absolutely.
So do check that out. It's going out on Sunday.
100%. Go give it a watch.
Enjoy it.
Well, Peter, there's just enough time to talk about the sponsor for this week once more, and that is the PlayStation 3 and Vita stores. Let me just get my... It says, "Sup, idiots. Bet you feel silly for wasting all that money now. Screw you, we're Sony." And then it's just got a crude drawing of Jim Ryan flipping us off. What the hell?
Oh, what?
What the hell, Sony?
God, like
so rude.
Real rude.
Let's get Jim Ryan out. Am I right? Let's use our collective social media bargaining power and get Jim Ryan out of here.
Jim Ryan out. Jim Ryan out.
No, as discussed before, I think everything will be fine. But there we are. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.